going to do is we'll just go through some of the stuff. We're not going to make any decisions anyway. Just, there's some announcements to make. And Malcolm, are you going to give a presentation on 76? I think we can go ahead. No, we're not going to vote on it.
So we can at least give your report.
And we'll go from there. First thing we'll have is roll call.
Okay. Kit?
Yeah.
Don's not here. Malcolm?
Yep.
Robin?
Here.
Jim's not here. Harold is here. Yeah. Gordy?
Here.
Jack's not here. Stephen's not here. Ron's not here. And Grace is not here.
Okay. So, again, as I said, we don't have a quorum. And the minutes for our next meeting, or the last meeting, aren't done yet. So, those are, we need six.
We need six?
Six for a quorum. We have 11 members. So, anyway, the minutes will be continued. The November 8th minutes will be continued to January meeting for our approval. The other couple quick things, because everybody's aware, we have a new planning director. And do all of you know which one he was of the three?
just found out just now.
It is Robert Millspaw.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't the guy from Sherwood.
No, he was the guy from outside of Seattle, wasn't he?
Well, but there were two guys from out of Sherwood.
You know,
yeah.
The long hair.
The long hair guy, yeah.
The long hair.
He wasn't the older guy. He wasn't the guy from Sherwood, but the guy with the longer hair. And he came from Washington. And also
he recently been in Oakland, California, too.
Some other places.
Recently lost his wife to cancer.
Yeah. Yeah. And he'll be coming on board, according to Mike, on the 20th of this month. So, begin his learning process. And we did receive resignation from Gene Dunaway. And the board is advertising for filling that position at this point in time. And I'm going to be sending a letter to commissioners to ask that Stephen Williams be replaced because he has not been attending. He's not doing anybody any good by staying on, and we need to get somebody that can help. And he came from the Williams area, so we need to see probably. Mm-hmm. I think that's where his designation is. Mm-hmm. And our next meeting is January 10th, same time, same place. So the announcement I have, Robin, you said you wanted a minute or two.
This is just a personal issue.
Okay.
I just wanted everyone that I know that I am looking for ideally a caretaking gig or a place to rent.
Who is it?
Me. Right. They're like around $500 at most, within about 10 minutes of time.
If you want to come down to planning and help me out, you can be my caretaker.
I wasn't talking about it.
Oh, darn.
How do they get a hold of it? How do they get a hold of it? How do they get a hold of it?
Pardon me?
How do they get a hold of you? The number that's...
Oh, yeah, you can
okay.
get a hold of me with the number.
Okay. Very good.
In February.
Okay. So our next item is Art 76. Welcome.
Okay.
Well, before we start, we've all got the memos from Grace in regards to the Fish and Wildlife person and the presentation. Everybody seemed to agree with that time frame. So, okay, thank you.
I hope everybody got a chance to at least summarize the test a month or two ago.
Or at least to read through it.
Or at least read through it. And I'll wonder if you have them right there.
Yeah.
Have right. Every word everywhere.
And I have...
Data, it was August 18th, mm-hmm. No, November 8th, it's for the November 8th meeting.
That,
that's the
November 8th meeting, yeah, we're a couple
of
years old. Yeah, if you were going to do it in November, this is just for the November meeting, okay.
Yeah, we figured it out.
Yeah.
So, if you look at that, there's all the different topics that you go through in November, basically, and just a little background, I made the mistake of opening my mouth and Harold asked if anybody had any questions about Article 76 and he said, what?
Sure.
So fortunately, Chet and Dean, which is on the list, volunteered to help us get in. So anyway, we went around and interviewed various people in the county, including Roger and Bob and Chuck and Public Works. And Gene and Kit, between them, figured out, I think when I first made my suggestions, I think I had maybe 14 different
or
items.
15.
Or 15. And they found things that said, well, this is kind of dumb because it already is covered back here, and we struck that out, or some of the things, it was like, well, you know, it's just not worth that much work. It's only affecting hardly anybody in the county anyway. So we narrowed it down to about, I think, four. But then we went through some of them, our suggestions would make conflicts in different parts of our LDC, so we added some of the, you know, some changes. So they would agree if we do make changes with the one, we'll correlate with it. So I'll just, I guess, go through these things one at a time. I suppose best if anybody has questions or suggestions, we'll just take them one at a time. Probably easier than waiting until the end, I forget what I said.
Okay.
Start on number one.
With
the
I almost said it was number one.
Okay,
it might be number one, that makes sense.
We now have a quorum. Congratulations, Grace.
Do you want me to continue or
go ahead.
Do the minutes or what?
No, you can't do the minutes anyway. They're not ready to go.
Okay, the first thing, one of the things that we saw a couple months ago or more was the flood flow presentation. I think it was Bob Hart and Mickey Grace who said it was unusually expensive or something.
Oh, wow.
Like 10 or
15
or something like that.
Oh, we're starting those engineer plans.
Right.
At the preliminary stage, it's $10,000-$15,000.
Okay, well, I thought
those are the erosion
control,
right?
Well, the flood flow was what my impression was. Anyway.
It's the stormwater. It's not the erosion.
Yeah, no. Stormwater.
So I talked with Chuck and Rob. I used to design culverts. I used to say culvert flow relationships and equations and stuff to geological survey. And I said, you know, I can come up with a simple equation. We can just plug in a couple numbers and it would be really easy. We could save a lot of money. And Rob and or Chuck, I don't remember which one, said, well, you know, we consider doing that ourselves, and you're right, but we decided that the engineers don't have to do such a thorough job and charge $10,000 or $15,000. You really think they could probably do it if they wanted to within 3 to 4 hours, including coffee breaks. So, he says, let them figure it out. If the applicants want to pay an engineer to spend all that time, that's fine.
Well, so do they, but don't they have to have an engineer?
Yeah, but the point was, they're saying you can do it in 3 or 4 hours instead of 10 or 15
hours. Well, yeah. Yeah, we need, just a second, because we're getting everybody talking, and
I'm basically quoting what they told me, and based on that, there's no point in us doing a change if the public works letting that guy's kind of
looking. Well, I did one for some mini story, and they did that abbreviated and submitted it in, and it was rejected, saying we want full calculations because the specific wording of the pre-app was a preliminary floodway or flood analysis or drainage analysis. And when that abbreviated one was submitted in, it was rejected, saying, no, we want it done. And when I sat down and talked to them to try and find out exactly what's going on, I said, why do you want all these out front? And they said, it's to look at not only on-site, but to see what's going on downstream, because if the flows that you're creating have a problem with the downstream facility, you want to know that out front. And I go, not everybody does. You know, if you, in the pre-app, say there is an issue that you may want to address to give you a heads up that there's a problem or a constriction, then it's up to the guy you want to spend it out front. But when we try the actual abbreviated ones, it's not gone through the review process.
Well, I guess I'm caught in the middle here because I'm deciding to go with this hand, so somebody needs to. Robert was here before.
I'm down.
Snapped each other for a while. Anyway, based on that, we did not.
Go ahead, Gordon has a
search for
help. Yeah. Well, this really strikes a sore point with me because it doesn't have to do not only with stormwater runoff or pre-design or whatever, but as somebody that's involved in construction, what we've seen over the last 10 years is that every agency, planning department, building department, there has become increasingly reluctant to make any decisions and to approve anything. Their fallback position is always, well, you need to get an engineer to do that. And there are some certain circumstances where it's an unusual structural situation or where it's an unusual stream situation where that may be justified, but in the most cases, it's just purely and simply passing the buck. And it really is annoying because we step up and we pay, as builders and developers, we pay up front considerable plan check fees and original engineering fees and so on. We have people on staff that are being paid reasonable salaries to look at this stuff. And at the same time, if there's anything that's slightly out of the ordinary, or even if it isn't for that matter, they're saying, well, you just need to go get an engineer. And this response that you can expect of an engineer, you can say to them, well, you know, Bob, that should only take you 2 or 3 hours. You know, why are you charging me? That doesn't happen. I'm sorry. I deal with every engineer in this valley, practically, and to try and, I've got a couple that I can arm wrestle and who might be real hungry to pay their mortgage or something that'll be reasonable about it. But for the most part, no engineer will specify one bolt when five will do. They have no responsibility for what it costs. They don't ever want to hear from you again for any kind of liability situation, so they over-design everything by a factor of five. And so here we have, you know, paid public officials, most of whom have credentials or they wouldn't be where they are, who have a chance to review plans, and instead of doing what they should do and say, yeah, this is acceptable, or saying, no, go out and spend another $10,000 or $15,000 so that I don't have to be on the hook. It's gone from something that was a rare occasion 10 years ago to being the standard of the industry right now. It's adding huge costs to building, and it's just not right. So we as a task force are supposed to be looking at things that are unreasonable and above and beyond the requirements of what's really necessary. And like I say, I look forward when somebody comes back, they do an initial review of something, and they go, you've got an unusual situation. You think you just have a ditch here, but it's also got three other ditches dumping into it. Or if I have a structural situation where I'm building a three-story tower made out of glass or something, that's fine. I mean, I need an engineer. But when they tell me that they want me to get an engineer to size a beam that they can look up in the same table that I can actually look up, I can't stamp this because I'm not an engineer, and then I got to go and pay an engineer $800 to give me that, that's above and beyond, and that's the kind of thing that I think that this task force would be dealing with. So my answer to you, Malcolm, is that I think that we need to say, why can't we have some reasonable tables for normal situations that you as professionals behind the planning desk and the building desk can say, oh, yeah, we can deal with that. And only send us to the engineers when you have an unusual situation.
I think that makes sense.
We covered that on our first page. So we can be redirected, and we'll go back
right.
And look at that for
you. I'm all in favor of redirecting. This is, you really touched a raw spot.
Rob and Chuck, maybe, I'm not talking about the same thing you are. Maybe you're talking about something that's more comprehensive than what I was thinking about, just how big the culverts have to be on the whole project.
Article 76 is the discussion of where we're going to get it.
Yeah, that's what we're specifically dealing with, but it's symptomatic of the whole trend, which is let's have the engineers do it and let the customer pay for it no matter what it costs.
As I say, there isn't a regulation. It's a policy decision that needs to be made within the governmental structure.
Part of 76, I don't remember how we got into this thing.
Well, that's in the erosion and control drainage section of the code. It says the plan shall be prepared by a registered civil engineer. So that's probably where they're getting it from.
What section?
83, erosion and control of storm facilities.
Well, it sounds to me like we should get Bob and or Chuck in here for a meeting so that I'm here. Yes, not down there going, yeah, but they said.
Yeah, it's like I said. When the first letter came out, it says preliminary, and when I went back and said, what does preliminary mean? They said full calculations, so we know the exact flow going in, so we know if your facility is appropriate.
But what I got from them was the full calculations in that big of a deal. And I don't see why it should be myself. You know, if they're going to be causing developers problems, let's all get down to the same table and lock it up. We might suggest it, and that's up to the committee for it.
Okay. Well, I think what we'll do is ask them to come in at some other point in time here.
Moving on.
Okay.
I'd suggest that we try and invite a couple of the civils to come sit in on that as well. They're not just staff. The private civil engineers, the ones that were doing it, is our manager. So we hear their side of it as well.
That's going to cost you $1,000. Okay, the next four issues, and I'll just hand out for those who have it, expenses 1 through 4. The one that we passed out a month ago. They're numbered up in that green.
Three changes in all colors.
Yeah. Looks like this.
All four of these deal with a similar thing. That's the one I was talking about. Where we addressed one and found these other three that were related. They're all dealing with excavation on Keith's ground over 15% or granitic. The first one requires an approved erosion plan prepared by an engineer before disturbing any soil on any site development. Second one, approved erosion plan prepared by a registered engineer before disturbance for driveway. Third one, regards basically the whole article 7 for erosion control and storm drain facilities. And the fourth one requires a registered civil engineer to be prepared to any grading and filling. So they're all pretty much pretty similar, but just in different parts of the code.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them require a study for any cuts or fills, regardless of how big they are. And I mentioned it one of our months ago that my recollection from like the early 80s when I first started got my contractor's license, you didn't have to do that unless it was over 30 inches high. Now, Michael Snyder said it might not be true, but regardless, I did talk to Rob and Chuck about that also, and they said they're fine with saying anything over 48 inches cut or fill. So that's why we wrote these four different deals, and we put in that flyer you'll see that each one of them has recommended change language, and that's really, we didn't do that to try to do the work for the planning department, but just to make
cover all the areas we thought related to each other, because it was the same thing in different parts of the code.
Grace?
Following this, on that site, I did have an issue with the 83, but I see it's repeated here, is slopes and or granitic soils. The part that I've objected to is that it's just granitic soils and it's flat, and you're going to put a driveway in and a culvert, even that requires an engineer's report first, whereas I don't understand why, since so much of the ground is flat and it can't be that different, and I know it is different, but why an engineer's report is required for a flat driveway with a standard culvert.
Well, I agree, and that's why we were addressing this. In fact, to me, the way the rules are written, if I went out and wanted to plant a rose bush, I'd have to get an engineer's report before I started shoveling the ground. No, they're not going to make me do that, mm-hmm. but that's the extreme example. Like you say, if it's flat ground or hardly any slope and you're digging a 1 foot cut.
Okay, right here in 2, I see what you mean. Good.
If we decide to recommend that change to the commissioner, but it also suggests we might want to get together with somebody who knows more about this than I do, or has to write papers and standards for how often the culverts have to be, or the rock lining, or something like that.
And you put that on the bottom of page 3.
Yeah, most of the stuff I've got in there.
And we're not trying to write code. This is recommendations, but we tried to make it as simple and clear and concise as possible so that when planning looked at it, it would be pretty clear to them.
So that's 1 through 4, and I'm willing to take questions or suggestions or go on to number 5, 6, and 7 more at a time.
Let's hit those first. So, okay. Comments? Jordan.
Well, I've got a question or comment. The question would be Article 76 primarily, is Article 76 primarily intended to make sure that we have access for fire and so on? I mean, isn't that what it was primarily intended? So any of the
sea and fire access, police, ambulance, right. Fire.
So this isn't a buyer beware situation or quality control to police excavators or anything else for the sake of protecting a home buyer to find out that they don't get a substandard driveway. It's the fact that you don't want, when the fire truck goes rolling up there in an emergency, to find out that the road is sloughed off. Or the truck. Is that correct?
That's the big point, yeah.
Yeah. So when you dial 911, somebody can actually get there if you're having a heart attack.
Yeah. Well, from that perspective, it makes sense to me if you have a 47-inch cut, it's not going to slump down and
Well, I support this change because, like Grace was saying, again, from being out there and doing it, the very fact that something's granitic doesn't mean that it's dangerous. Or, you know, the thing about granite, as most of you probably know, is that as long as you leave it alone, it's like concrete. As soon as you disturb it, it's sand. And so, you know, the issue is how much are you disturbing and what are you doing with it? And I think that the 48-inch is a much more reasonable thing than a blanket thing, saying, well, anytime you get granitic soil, all of a sudden you can find it some terrible zone where you have to you know, deal with
it. It also said that granite tends to be more erosive, less likely to slump than to erode because it has low cohesiveness and doesn't have much fairly easily washed away. Someone can suppose that it can wash, but to have a landslide in granite isn't one of his.
Well, I'm just curious how you reach the 48-inch.
Rob and Chuck.
Oh, okay.
Public work.
Right. Okay, so they just recommended that they thought that 48-inch would be okay.
I was thinking it was 30 before. I'm planning with 31.
Oh.
And 48-inch is kind of an arbitrary thing. It's the same thing with retaining walls. Anything over 48-inch by retaining wall, it has to be engineered. It's not like it came down off the mountain with Moses. It's just... It's kind of 48 inches, that's the height of a sheet of plywood. It's 6 courses of block. It's, you know, it's a round number.
It used to be 8, but last time I built one. Okay.
Been a while, huh?
Yeah. Okay, the fifth one. There's numbers on that. And, this one's a change in addition. And it is addressing... Yeah, the modification of standards that are available for developers if they don't like some of the rules already listed in the Article 76 is the access standard subject to modification, like the driveway connects the main public road, driveway connects the private or non-maintained. We're just adding a letter C, reduced thickness or depth, depending on who you talk to, a road drop can be used. Standards that are there call for, I don't remember, something like 8 or 10.
6 inches or?
6 inches, the base and 2 or 3 inches of top off. It's a lot of rock. Most of the roads I've built around here have come down 2 inches of rock, and if it's too soft, then I track it a little bit more on. So, personally, I find what people decide how much they want for themselves, but this is basically saying you can do it if you get it approved by an engineer.
Well, this one I thought made a lot of sense to me.
I think Rob and Chuck said this should be, if anybody...
Well, that's not our jurisdiction, so the driveway.
That's between the fire company and the property owner.
Well...
Or the emergency folks. Well, I noticed that over in Jackson County, when they went through this, that the fire folks were fairly lenient on some of the standards. I mean, they didn't have a problem with reducing the capacity on bridges to 50,000.
Really?
And they didn't have a problem with the number of homes on dead end type. So they were pretty willing to accept.
Well, Rob says, you know, just bounce it off the commissioners. They're going to have the fire folks there anyway if they do decide to pursue.
Well, as I say, it adds more cost to the development.
It's a lot of money, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Some of my driveways, I wouldn't be able to build a house or a building.
It says in Article 10 that driveways as close below 15% have to have a base course of 6 to 8 amps. Your leveling course of 2 to 3 inches or 3/4 inch minus the angle of the gravel. So you're talking 8 to 11 inches.
So reduced depth of road rock can be used if approved by a licensed engineer. So if you're on solid rock, you don't need to put 11 inches on top. Seems kind of common sense to me.
Does anybody have a problem with that?
Okay, number 6. Oh, this one is kind of fun. As written now, you have to have a driveway developed at any within 50 foot of any habitable structures and 150 foot of any non-habitable structures. But the definition of structures in the Rural Land Development Code says
structure, anything constructed, erected, installed, or portable, the use of which requires a location on the ground, attached to something having a location on the ground, including swimming pools, spas, gas, or liquid storage tanks that are at or above the ground. Basically, I don't think we need to have a road developed to a swimming pool for firefighting, and I don't think we need to have a road developed pump house or a dog house or a street sign or a mailbox. So I think we're suggesting that we use the definition of
structure
that is in the OARs, which was written by the Oregon Department of Forestry for firefighting purposes, which is back to find that.
Right,
the Oregon Department of Forestry's version of a structure, which says, where is it? Oh, the red. Yeah, the red's the Oregon Department of Forestry, the blue's the RLDC. Structure means a permanently sited building, a manufactured home, or a mobile home that is either a dwelling or at least one side that is fully covered. Again, I don't think anybody's going to consider a road to your dog house.
Does anybody have any recollection of why the distance on non-habited structures? Is there
Roger, it's just an operating distance for the fire guys. I think, you know, our definition of structure is our own, and then the fire guys, you heard theirs, so yeah, that'd be the problem with having two different definitions in our code, but really the distance is an operating distance for the fire guys. Of course, they're not caring about a pump house or a dog house. They're looking at a barn, a shop, or a house. And just, you know, our definition is what it is.
So could we not make a recommendation to just accept the OAR, which is the Oregon Department of Forestry's definition, which would, that's what our issue would be, rather than just having two, that we still eliminate the county's definition for the state OAR definition, which is
simpler.
Yeah. Grace?
Good, but I was just going to point out that in rural areas, very often barns are over 150 feet from the houses. Reasonable to build a fully developed driveway all the way out to a barn that might be a quarter mile away, or sometimes those structures are.
Well, one of my thoughts is maybe the landowner already decided they care enough about the structure to put a road in to fight the fire, otherwise it may have been burned as a burn.
A lot of it's going to have to do with what the insurance companies look at when they go out and do the inspection. If a guy has fire insurance, I can guarantee you that the insurance companies will do an investigation or inspection on it. If they don't feel it's proper, they're either going to jack the rate up or tell the person they won't cover insurance. So that's another option. But my thought is one of the things we're trying to get to is simplicity and
exactly.
Making it work, and this probably would work if we went with just the structure definition of the OAR and eliminate the structure definition or just reference that in the county's definition.
In this case, structure refers to...
Yeah. Robin?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm wondering, too, if they call it the swimming pool then so that the firefighters have access to that to help.
Usually the swimming pools are pretty close to
that. That's covered in a whole other section, but yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm.
Just use that definition in this context. Section rather than referring to the generic definition of structure for planning for the county in general.
Well, as a matter of fact, there is more than two. For more than RLDC, at least I see, or maybe it's the public forest, I'm not sure. I see structure or policy differentiating a structure being a bridge and a tank used for a structure in the two culverts.
And planning wouldn't include the culvert as a structure for planning. Ground level is under 32.
Oh, under this. I hadn't really thought about it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Structure's kind of vague. So, yeah, this suggestion is just to change it just for this one.
Mm-hmm. Just for this one.
And you can phrase it that way. For the purposes of this
Article 76.
Structure is defined as blah, blah, blah.
Structure shall be defined as an OAR blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm. And that way it would match up.
Right.
We'd be having the same definitions in both codes.
It makes sense, therefore it can't be done.
Now, the way I read it, it says non-habitable structure shall be defined in a way R.
Right.
Structure means permanently sited building, manufactured home, or mobile home. So that is a habitable structure or it's a non-habitable structure. Because I would say a...
Their definition includes either one, it looks like.
See, a manufactured dwelling or mobile home would be a habitable structure.
Right.
It says it's a non-habitable structure.
I'm sorry, what says it's a non-habitable?
Right above it.
Right above it says non-habitable structure shall be defined.
So you strike both out.
No, which is it? Because
that is what we wrote, so maybe we should just say
maybe we should change that.
Structure shall be defined as an OER instead of non-habitable.
And I checked the code, and there is no differentiation between what is habitable and what is non-habitable.
Right.
So if you're going to have these terms, habitable and non-habitable, you're going to have to define them so you know exactly what it is. Because
that's a good point. I think we should just not say non-habitable.
We should just say structure
shall be defined.
So everybody line out non-habitable a little bit.
So, but back at the code, it says driveway shall be developed to within 50 feet of all habitable structures and 150 feet of non-habitable structures. You're defining what a structure is, which you don't tell what's the difference between a habitable and non-habitable because you have two different standards there.
Well, the recommendation would be just to eliminate the verbiage of non-habitable structures.
I guess
so then everything has to be within 50 feet?
No, we're not saying that. Everything has to be within 50 feet. We're just saying to change the definition of structure from the RLDC definition to the OER definition.
My point is there is no definition in the RLDC that says what a non-habitable structure is.
That's one you can't look at.
So, if you have a term, you have to define it, or how is Roger or anybody else going to administer that at the front counter? Is it only barns and garages?
Because no, it says 500 square feet right here.
I think Bob's talking about whether to put in 50 feet, whether to put in a road within 50 feet or 150 feet. We need a definition, but to me, it's the definition that the word habitable defines it.
But habitable is not defined.
Gordon has his hand up.
But not in the code.
Okay,
well, doing it this way. Habitable structure means a permanently sited building, manufactured home, or mobile home, which occupies at least 500 square feet of ground space and it has at least one side fully covered. Non-habitable structure means a permanently sited building or accessory building which occupies.
If it's a non-habitable structure, is it their job to put out the fire of non-habitable structures and their primary purpose is to put out fires in habitable structures? Or are they thinking about in terms of, well, in case this structure is non-habitable, might spread fire beyond itself? You know, I mean, what is the purpose of this subsection anyway, being 150 versus 50 and...
Well, the whole intent of it was to meet the requirements of the Senate Bill 360, which was to make sure that the properties were being taken care of or there was an ability to take fire, as far as fire protection. But the rules
of... Not totally. On 360, they only make you put in the buffer around your house. That's true.
But this is part of what generated this 76, was the 360.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, I suggest that maybe this is something that the subcommittee might want to spend. Well, the census is pretty good here that we agree that it's foolish to try and put a driveway. Really, the question of how to write it in a way that conveys what we're trying to do rather than us trying to do it by figure for everybody
does.
Me too, because I'm happy with it the way it is. We knocked out
I guess it'd be interesting to see what some of the fire districts. If they have any sets of conditions or criteria, I can't answer that. I mean, we've got IB and see what they have.
I was going to suggest that to the fire district or rural natural, and Joe Hyatt lives on that committee, but he's with the city now.
Right.
But also, Don Rubenstein was deeply involved with that. It was when Bruce Bartow was in, so he was deeply involved in that, so I don't even know how much Michael knows about.
And also, Bob Ettner's been working with rural metro.
Okay. See, yeah. I mean, to me, it has to have a purpose, and it might be a real legitimate purpose. Just say 150 feet from
an
all
non-habitable
property.
My guess is it's a hose pull.
Right.
Because you pull a hose 150 feet off a truck. More than that, they're not pulling that far.
That's right. Part of it. The other part is 150 feet is a reasonable operational area that guys can run back and forth and get hammers and stuff. That's what it is, too. It's not just the hoses, but that's a reasonable... They got to run back and grab a hatchet or whatever. 150 feet is their max. They want to go 500 feet and coming back. So it's also their operational area.
So Roger, the route get closer and faster to the house because there's somebody might be in.
I would guess that's probably. I mean, obviously the first primary thing for a fire guy is the house, and then a barn if they can if it's not far gone. So that would be my guess. And that's where that 150 foot is just really a working area more than just a home.
Did it come from like the fire?
Yeah, I know that's kind of what the fire guy's limits are, is that 150 feet, because I've had it many times discussions with them. And yeah, you know, everybody thinks it's a hose, that's part of it, but it's also their reasonable operational area that they can.
That's why the hoses aren't any longer than that.
Probably.
It's too heavy to drive them.
So, basically, you folks are going to relook at this.
Sure.
Thanks. Okay, next.
Okay.
Number 7. Did we cover vaguely 6, didn't we?
That was 6.
Yeah.
Number 7.
Yeah,
this is similar. I think the purpose was, the thought was to make the station management the same for the county that there is for the state. I know I talked to Roger, he thought that was a good idea, so you wouldn't have people come to that town this much.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how many times people call us, and it's about the Article 76, and the first thing they say is, well, I did all my state stuff off the grant, so I should be good, right? And I go, well, there's kind of two different ones, I'm not quite sure, but take a look at ours. So it would make it easier for me, because I could say, yeah,
so basically, the state has a lot less restrictive.
A little wordier.
They're wordier in a different way, right? But they're basically, I worked with the state guys and they're doing our Kimball 360, and several other people doing prickles on us up here, I guess. We're trying to get there and make the house as fireproof as you can. And your fire suppression for about 450 feet off from the house, and after that, you're probably wasting your time. Fire, if the embers blow up on your deck or your flammable roof or your gutter is full of leaves, and you're not going to prevent that from happening because they can come in from 500 feet away, a mile away, so a close area to the house and the house. And there's also something in here that I thought was weird. Well, it doesn't matter. There was something in here about the county code says that any slope on site on which the slope abutting any side slope. So below the house or the slope above the house, but
in all directions.
Basically, the state code is broken down into how your property is classified for fire risk, and there's the only classifications in Josephine County are moderate, high, and extreme. And since we don't allow flammable roofs anymore in developing property, it seems to me that the standards that apply here, the non-flammable roof standards, which are 30 feet per mile, 30 feet for high hazard, and 50 feet for extreme hazard. 3 times as much is basically 9 times as much. Plus, it's times a house is set back from the property line. You've got to be 150 feet away, and you want to be close, right?
I have another question I have for Roger McGill. Seems to me, and I can't find it now, but there was always an issue with the secondary zone on small lots in particular, because if you have you can't do another 50 feet to extend to 100 feet to the secondary zone, and it encroaches on somebody else's property, you have to get an easement So it seems to me that Michael recommended a change there because of the...
Well, that was an option. You didn't have to. That was an option. If you knew your neighbor, they're willing to give you one, then you're done right then and there.
Well, the way we interpreted it, when it first came out, they said it was required, but then so many people were complaining about it and couldn't get that easement from their neighbors that maybe they changed their kind of loop. Interpreted a little
bit. Well, I don't know about ever being required because I'll tell you, when I came over, I brought a fuel break easement from Jackson County that we used. Nobody had one in the county. So I don't know if that was required or not because nobody seemed to have a fuel break easement until I came here.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of an option that you're out of a modification process with the county. If you can go and get that, you've got it covered and you're off and running. Otherwise.
But it does say shall have a veterinary. Modification standards, and that's what I thought. Access, but at least in this county, we had a lot of complaints from people saying their neighbors wouldn't give them.
Yeah, that's why. That's why it's an option because some people hold you hostage over.
But the way it's written here, even in the corrected version, it still sounds like shall. It shall be done.
That's why we can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. You have to show up to me because, to be honest with you, you hardly ever get people come in with easements. I've seen maybe one my entire time I've been here.
Did they put 100 foot?
Yeah, they work it out another way.
Well, I used to recommend that their buildings are just automatically set at that 50 feet. But some people can't.
I think you can't do it. One, it's too narrow, or there's a topographical feature or something.
Or maybe you're going to the top of the property to get the best.
And that's why we got the modification process, because it isn't possible on all these lots.
Well, and ultimately, I mean, even Article 76, the fact is that for the most part, it's on the honor system, so nobody's going to come up 5 years later and find out you're still maintaining. Here,
you know,
let alone going over to the neighbor's house and finding out that somebody's still maintaining it over on the neighbor's property.
No, but if you cut, if the fire starts on your property and it spreads and you haven't maintained that, couldn't they get you then?
I don't know.
Couldn't you list the redefined structure? Something you talked about.
Yeah. Just to unify it. Bottom of page 5.
And that's pretty much all I've got. So if you want
questions?
The committee wants us to talk to some of these firefighter guys and see what the history was applied to have this 150 and 50 foot length, and also to see how they feel about defining the structure definition.
In the white, it's under, if you can't meet the secondary safety zones, you can't get, in the white. Basically, if you can't, you either have to relocate the house or you have to get an easement or apply for modification of standards procedures. And then in the yellow, page 727, it says 5 acres or smaller in size than any zone except the forest zone.
Where are you on that one?
727 section. 76.0804.
Okay.
A vacant lots of record. Anyway, if you can't make it because of the boundary, if you're under 5 acres or less, you do not have to do the modification standards. You can't make it. It says property only in fire safety zones are limited by property line. Modification of fire safety zone standards is not required if you're 5 acres or smaller.
Means that you can go closer to the property line than
setback, but not the 50 feet.
Fire safety.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, if we change this to match the OODF standard, you're not going to have to go farther than 30 or 50 feet from the property line anyway, because that's all the required setback or vegetation management is.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would simplify things.
rooms. I was involved with lawyers, so you know what happened then. It's complex.
That's pretty rude.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah. Oh, excuse me. Donald. Just to return to what Alvin asked, though, I don't personally think there's any so much need to go back to talk to the fire guys. It's just to clean up the language on the part about the structure and non-habitable structure and so on. And what you said, Donald, may solve the problem, just actually non-habitable. The rest of the definition then applies to having more than 500 square feet.
Well, I'm fine with that. I'm opposite.